Markets and 87th Precinct bonus episode. We were looking in our main episode at the 1964 87th Precinct story, Axe, or if you're in the UK, as I said before, Axe. It was the 18th book in the 87th Precinct series, and as usual in our bonus episode, we will concentrate mainly on looking at the editions that we own and some of the original editions that were released and giving you an assessment thereon. So, without further ado, I think we need to turn to the editions that we own. So I think Morgan and I have Pan editions, is that right?
We do indeed, yeah.
Steve-O has a Penguin edition. So I think we should go to Steve-O first, because his Penguin edition is probably the earliest one out of all of us.
Well, let me take a look, really.
Mid-60s?
Reprinted 69, published Penguin Books 68. So,
and okay. Into that cover, it looks like some kind of Pink Floyd album sleeve or something.
Yeah, it's like a hypnosis kind of,
Well, describe it for the nice well, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it's a Tony Palladino.
So he did a lot of the photographic Penguin covers, as we've discovered.
Black and white image of what looks like a man with a log for a head with an axe in the top of it. Ooh. But what it actually probably is a log with a shirt wrapped around it to make it look like a man.
Possibly.
Men don't have big logs for heads.
Not
and
generally.
It's got an axe in the top. But then everything else is black and white, apart from like the Ed McBain is the penguin green.
So yours is a green spine.
Yeah.
Proper classic green spine.
I really like it. It's probably the best cover I've had to date on any of mine.
Edition.
I think it's very striking.
I'd say it was symbolic, but it's almost literal.
It is.
It's literal and figurative, but not symbolic.
Yeah,
I know
what you mean.
Well, it's to do with that and
that's an axe.
But it's a good cover. I like it.
I think it's a good cover. It's certainly
striking.
Yeah, it's striking. It's one that I think when I've come across people sharing images of McBain books on Twitter and Instagram, very often comes up and people say this is an awesome cover.
It is.
I've just seen there's a bit of a nose there, and that's his mouth.
Right.
I think Steve-O's.
I've just noticed that.
I can't tell that from here. I don't know whether I agree with you, but
I think he's just attributing human characteristics to
looks more like a dog, but I don't think a dog was involved.
There's a word for when you the word is pareidolia when you see human faces in things.
Oh,
so you know
see them in everything.
When you see like a plug socket, like a continental one, and the two pin, and people say, oh, it looks like the eyes and the nose and things. When I think that's called pareidolia.
There's a really good Twitter feed for those. Which I've become moderately obsessed with, faces and things.
Faces and things, essentially. And like the house that looks like Hitler, I think, is one that used to do the rounds. But that's what Steve-O's edition is. So he's got a nice classic Penguin edition.
I have, yeah.
Steve-O, what does it smell like?
Well, I need to do the smelling all together.
Test. Well, all right.
No, you described your covers. And
well,
editions.
You described the cover of yours, Morgan. You've got a Pan edition that's different to mine.
Okay, I've got
all these. Will be on Instagram.
Looks in remarkably good nick, that Morgan.
It looks in remarkably good nick. I'm not going to discuss the smell because we're going to get to that in a moment. So it's the Pan edition, 1982 fifth printing.
Oh right, okay.
So it's called Axe. It's got a big picture of a bloodied axe on the front. You can't go far wrong with that.
Simple.
Does what it says on the tin, etc. Yeah, not much more to say about
no,
it.
No scribblings or dedications? Or.
In terms of dedications, let's have a look. Oh, you've got
I forgot about that. It just says Maggie.
Someone's written in Biro Maggie in the front of yours.
Apart from being dedicated to Barbara and
Barbara and Leonard
Harris, indeed.
Who I don't know who they are. I have a feeling I started researching that, and I feel like I haven't got the information to hand, and I apologise, and I will do everything in my power to try and find out and get that information to you. I'm very sorry. Very, very sorry.
Well, so you should be.
Because we've all got old editions, this isn't one that's been rededicated as many of them were in later printings as well.
Yeah.
My edition is a Pan edition from 1976. It's the second printing of the 75 edition. And again, it's got an axe on the front.
Let's have a look.
And it is just an axe. It's not.
It's a rather cleaner axe than mine.
It is. It's a photograph of an axe. And here
Made
I know
in Sweden.
I am a nerd. I know I am a nerd, and I've proven it time and time again on this podcast and generally in how I conduct my life.
A nerd? You? No. No.
The axe on the cover of this edition has a stamp on it. And so it turns out that this axe that's photographed on this pan edition is made by Hultsbruk Axes.
Okay.
Who have been hand-forged in Sweden since 1697. Hultsbruk evoke a bygone era, a time when axes were an essential lifeline in the wilderness. Their collection of axes, hatchets, splitting and felling axes are made for working outdoors the traditional way, and they still exist to this day.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you think that Sam Whitson would have been given such a prestigious axe for his woodchopping duties?
I suspect what actually happened is that someone was tasked with making a photograph for the front of this book, and they probably had more money to buy an axe than anyone else who's ever actually needed an axe has, and they've gone out and bought the best Swedish axe they can find.
You got some squiggles in yours.
I have got axe.
So Steve-O can tell you about what's inside the front cover of my book. It's got an Ex Libris sticker in.
It says a couple of initials, Llewellyn Hodge. A-D-A-R-A, Llewellyn Hodge.
It's quite hard to tell what their first initials are because it's written calligraphically.
Yeah, D-A.
With a lot of swirls.
Llewellyn
like
Hodge.
Elizabeth I.
1979, yeah.
It's very, very fancy.
I have a feeling I've got a couple with that signature.
Do we know who
front.
This is?
No
have
idea.
Have you Googled?
I've tried.
Yeah, probably a nobody.
But it's someone who's got Ex Libris stickers to stick in the front.
Yeah.
Which Ex Libris just means from the library of, which means I own this book.
Yeah.
From the library of D.A. Llewellyn Hodge.
I wonder if they're still alive and they're out there and they're regretting the fact that we're now forensically exploring their books.
We're going to sniff Llewellyn Hodge's book
in
3 seconds.
That wasn't so, 3 seconds.
Viscount Llewellyn Hodge, if you're listening, your book is now being sniffed.
Fairly neutral flavoured.
So, flavoured.
There's probably a bit more to yours.
Approach with caution.
Well, I'm going to have to go up with it.
Right, this is Morgan's.
Ooh, no, I quite like that though. Oh, yeah, yours wins absolutely hands down. Oh, but I quite like that.
Take a hit of this.
I think it's quite a nice smell, that.
See, I can't normally even smell
classic
these books.
Old book smell,
that's
that.
That's quite musty.
It's
gone to the back of my throat.
I can't normally smell these books, but this particular one I had to read at arm's length because it was particularly acrid.
That smells about as old as the Happy Kids.
It does.
So I think covers, I'm self-proclaiming mine the best cover, but
yeah,
yours
Steve-O's
has got the best smell.
Steve-O's has got the best cover, Morgan's has got the best smell, and mine's got the best random scribbles in it.
Yep, so we're all winners in our own way.
Hodge, yeah.
We will share those on the Twitter feed.
Apart from the smell.
Well, we can't share, until they invent a sort of smell internet. I mean, the internet does smell pretty bad most of the time.
It really stinks.
But I also have some reproduction of the original covers, so as most of the recent books were, that it was issued in hardback by Simon & Schuster in America. It was issued in Hamish Hamilton in the UK, and they used the same cover design, which was, and I'll show you this in a second, basically an axe hitting someone's head.
Okay.
It was issued in pocketbooks. Now, this is interesting. It's not in permabooks anymore. It's in pocketbooks. Pocketbooks released permabooks originally, but I think the permabooks imprint has gone now.
Okay.
But this was released as pocketbooks. Looks almost exactly the same as a permabook, but the original paperback was. I quite like the design of this. It's the word. It's an axe smashing the word axe.
Oh, cool!
But there was also a release in a thing called in hardback called Thriller Book Club Edition.
Ooh!
And I'm deliberately holding off on showing you the cover of this because it's.
Let's have a look.
Well, let me explain first what the Thriller Book Club was because it's quite interesting. As best as I can tell, the Thriller Book Club was a series of special editions produced in the UK under the guidance of a chap called W.A. Foyle, who, we can assume, is William Alfred Westrop Foyle.
Who was Foyle's man.
Foyle's Bookshop, which is the huge, important bookshop in London, which has just been bought out by Waterstone.
Yeah, it sounds,
So he was a businessman who opened this bookshop in 1903, Foyle's, which if you ever come to London, you should go down Charing Cross Road and go to all the second-hand bookshops, but you want to go to this big flagship bookshop, Foyle's. And they owned quite a lot of Charing Cross Road at one point, not as much now. And the way I sort of worked it out was that the Thriller Book Club editions have an address on it of 121 Charing Cross Road, and that was once one of Foyle's properties. So they seem to republish in special book club editions quite a bunch of stuff that was put out in Hamish Hamilton or whatever. Clearly, it was one of his entrepreneurial things of getting these copies out there. So I'll show the gentleman here the covers, especially the bottom one, which is a Thriller Book Club edition, which is very strange. So perhaps Steve could describe it.
Well, the one at the bottom?
Yeah.
Well, you're clearly in a basement, I would say, of the apartment building at the bottom of the stairs, peering through into the gloom. And there is a man in overalls there who has got a hatchet raised above his head and looking behind a wall, so you can't see who he's looking at. But he is appearing to hold the ratchet in menace.
The ratchet?
Hatchet. No, it's not a hatchet. It's a monkey wrench. A monkey wrench, yeah.
Which does figure in the book.
Yeah. So that's
But it's a red herring of a cover, isn't it?
It is. It's a bit of a curious thing.
It's the character is rendered as black, isn't he? So, I think it's a pretty clear reproduction of the cover.
I'm not sure. I think it could be the shade there.
I'm fairly certain he's meant to be black. Surely,
this person,
particularly just because, like, where his hands in the light there,
But the earlier editions, first hardback editions and paperback editions are quite nice, graphic design wise.
Great. I quite like this one. Quite like that one as
But yeah, that bottom one does seem to be deliberately trying to throw the reader off the scent somewhat.
So that's the history of the different editions of the book, including the ones that we have to hand. For once, none of us has an Orion edition or a whatever that other publisher was that we don't particularly like.
Alison and Busby. I don't know if they got this far along. I think they mainly went up to like the early 60s and then stopped. But it's normally me who's got the dreadful Orion version for some reason. I've no idea why. No, we've all got like quite fun ones.
Yeah, so there we go. That's that, really. And in terms of what I've got to talk about, that's about it. I was wondering, you know, if we've been up to watching or reading any other crimey stuff recently.
Crimey stuff. I've been watching some Inspector Morse's, which are always great fun.
Inspector Morse is brilliant.
Who's a big, a grumpy detective from Oxford.
Is Inspector Morse a police procedural or is it a detective story?
See, I've never read any of the books.
I started reading one of them while I was on holiday.
But they're supposedly very good, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I enjoyed the one I was reading and it annoyed me that I had to leave it at the place because it wasn't my property.
I don't think they're police procedurals, though, are they?
No, I don't think so.
Morse is too much of a maverick for that.
More in the sort of, like, more classic detective novel sort of mould.
But trying to make... Yeah.
But he's constrained by he's forever the police being, system, isn't
he? Yeah, he's forever...
He
doesn't get to do anything particularly off-book, as it were.
He always has strange... Morse. He does that.
I wish I could render that in words as the title of this episode.
He always does that in every single episode. But no, I should read those because they are supposedly good.
Yeah.
And I think originally quite a bit different because the Lewis character, instead of being like a young Geordie who's like, you know, 15 years younger than Morse's character, 20, you know, something like that. He's actually older than Morse, isn't he? Or same age as, and like a Welsh guy.
Yeah, so he's someone who's not progressed as far through the police by the same point.
Yeah, and Morse drives around in like an old Lancia, as opposed to a
Jaguar in the TV series.
But I think
series.
He likes real ale and likes opera, as Colin Dexter did.
A lot of British crime series nowadays translates across to the US, because I think there's a lot more... With these big successes like Broadchurch and things like that, I think they get bought out and sent over to America. I wonder with things like Morse, which happened in the 80s and 90s.
Imagine an American Inspector Morse.
Where
would he be set, though? Where's the equivalent of Oxford, university town in...
MIT or somewhere? I don't know.
I don't know. You'd set him somewhere probably on the East Coast, I guess. Like, I don't know. Would you have him
Where's one of the big universities?
In, like,
there?
New Haven or something?
What university's there?
Is that Yale?
Yale, yeah. Say something like that. It'd have to be somewhere. Because half of them involve academics.
Dons and professors. Yeah. And... and scientists looking for research money.
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah. Yeah, and he's quite close to London, so quite often some of the stories involve him popping into London. So if he was there, he could pop into wherever.
Yeah, he could pop to New York or what have you. Yeah,
that'd be doable. I just wonder if it ever made it over there, particularly in terms of the TV series, whether it would have translated over to... I don't know, anyway.
Hmm.
Have you seen Inspector Morse, if you live... outside of the UK is a question, I am asking.
Yeah, they're good, yeah. And I've started today or yesterday, but only read a few pages, that book I bought, Axel Sund Eriksson, The Crow Girl, which got very good reviews.
Hmm. When's that from?
Last year.
All right, okay. So are we talking Scandi Noir?
Yeah, but I remember Mark Lawson giving it a very good review.
Oh, Mark Lawson.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it seems
hello.
Quite...
That's my
The first few pages has some unnamed person buying lots of polystyrene to clearly soundproof a room and putting a child in it. And then the second kind of bit of the chapter is the body of a child being found.
Eep.
And so it's
ouch.
Like, oof, right.
Okay, sounds alarming.
And it's got... quite small writing and is very thick.
Okay.
So
that'll keep you busy.
Yeah.
Indeed it will.
Whereas I've been reading a Raymond Chandler.
Ooh.
Not a Ramon Chaniel.
I do love Philippe Malou, his main character, but...
But no, I've been reading Raymond Chandler and Playback.
Oh.
Which is one of his later ones.
Well,
it's like
his last one with Philip Marlowe.
The last full one that he wrote before Poodle Springs, which Robert B. Parker finished.
Yeah.
Is that the one with which has got a really weird end? Where they're in some
house. I don't know, I've not got to the end
yet.
It's the one after The Long Goodbye.
I've definitely read it.
The Long Goodbye should totally have been the last novel in that series. It's interesting Playback.
I'm enjoying it so far.
I mean,
there's
definitely stuff to enjoy there, but it's a minor entry into the canon, I think. And
I must have read it 15 years ago, so I can't remember. I seem to remember having a pretty weird ending in some house with some bottles.
I forget now, but. Because I read it in an omnibus with like all the novels leading up to it.
Did you read it on an omnibus?
Sadly not. Well, probably partly actually.
Yeah.
But after reading Long Goodbye, it was like, oh, I kind of wish he hadn't just written this one because Long Goodbye was awesome.
All right.
It's
giving me a lot of hope for enjoying the rest of
I still enjoy reading it, don't get me wrong. It's like when we don't enjoy an Ebert Bay novel, comparatively it's still a good reading experience.
Fair enough.
I need to reread those because I just cannot remember what happens in any of them.
I've not read Poodle Springs, which is the unfinished one that Rob B. Parker finished, but having heard many people savaging it, I'm probably not super keen to go out of my way to read it.
Okay.
One of those that I remember that I liked amazingly was, is it Lady in the Lake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very good.
I remember that being, I think that was probably the first one I read and just thought...
I think like pretty much like all the way from The Big Sleep through to The Long Goodbye, you can't put a foot wrong, really.
It's a run of books that is solidifies the detective, the solo hero detective in perfect form.
They're all absolutely storming, and the writing's wonderful. There's people who criticise his later writing, but I think like The Long Goodbye, it's not as tightly written, and Marlowe's getting sentimental. It's like, could the character not develop? I think he can. Mm. I think it's great. I like that.
So the High Window as well, is that?
High Window's cracking, yeah. All
yeah, I
like
need to reread
novels.
Those, actually, I think.
There's another podcast.
Yeah.
What about you, Morgan? Anything crimey on the watching or reading front recently?
Nothing, like, specifically super kind of exactly crimey, but at the moment I'm reading 2666 by Roberto Bolano, which doesn't start as it's this big thick chunk of a novel by this Chilean writer. I think it was published after he died. He originally wanted it to be published as 5 separate books, but it just came out as one massive doorstop. And so far, like, nothing massively crimey has happened in it, but there is talk of a serial killer in the town in which much of the action is set. So I think that's going to crop up at some point.
Oh.
I don't think it's going to be in any way a crime novel. It's a bit more, from the write-ups that are on the jacket of the book, like, some have described it as how they'd imagine it would have been if Georges-Louis Borges had written a novel. Or I think one of the reviews is, if you've enjoyed snacking on Murakami, have a feast with Roberto Bolano.
Well, that's interesting there, because both Borges, or Borges, and Murakami are both detective story fans.
Indeed.
And have written detective stories.
Yeah, so I think it seems like there's going to be a crime element to this story, whilst it also blows your mind in different ways all over the place too. It's fascinating. I have no idea where it's going.
Oh, that's good. That's nice.
So I'm enjoying it.
The area of the book I've been reading is the Daily Telegraph cryptic crossword book, which I occasionally look at and try and do some clues and then put it down again. So there you go.
It's wind me up too much, that.
I like a cryptic crossword, but
I don't like holding something that says Daily Telegraph on it. That upsets me. So I usually scribble the name out on the front.
I do find the Telegraph one is normally easier than the Guardian one, though.
It is.
And the Observer, there's a cryptic crossword to go for.
Well, yeah.
Life's too short for cryptic crosswords.
I feel that they feel like your life is extended by how slow it makes you feel like your brain is going while you try to work them out.
I'm just not intelligent enough for them. Afraid.
I don't think it's intelligence, it's just like
it's knowing the system.
That's it, it's getting your brain attuned to the system, that's all it is.
Well, absolutely, yeah. So I believe.
You got any updates for us on Poirot, Steve-O?
Poirot?
You got any more information, any new Poirot stories?
No, I can't. What, dream-wise? Just dream about Poirot?
No, you told us a new one last time.
I think you spun.
What about Maigret?
I think you may have spun a Poirot story.
What am I on about? I've just finished a Maigret. Maigret 2 days ago. Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah. What the hell happened? You see, I'm as bad with those as these. What happened in that? Oh, yeah, I think he was 87 as well. Perhaps that's why I said 87 instead of 86. That was an 87 guy who had been found in his study, shot 4 times, and Maigret couldn't work out why. But in the end, he did.
And I think spoiler alert.
I think it's called,
in the end,
I think
he
it's
did.
Called, he was an ex-ambassador, this guy, and I think it was called Maigret in Society.
Oh, very nice.
But they have quite a nice flourish by Simenon, because at the very end he says where he is when he finished writing it. So it'd be Simenon, wherever he is, June 1960 or something, at the very end.
Oh,
it's a nice flourish. You started reading any of yours? You bought some, didn't you?
I've got like a bunch waiting to go. I haven't read them yet, but I'll let you know when I do.
Simenon is definitely on the list of our recommendations, our official recommendations list, I would have thought. The couple I've read, I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, they're a bit peculiar, some of them, I would say.
There's the translation issue from the French.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple of different translations.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting stuck into those, because mine are like the most recent translations, so hopefully should be really good.
I must have read a dozen, I would say. Mm. And some seem quite preposterous when you read them, where others seem a bit more procedurally, to be honest, and a bit kind of like
this is post-war France, procedural, which is very different from 1950s America.
But he's up against the system, and then others he just does a bit of a, just goes off and does his own thing, and a bit more less unbelievable. But they're always like really good. He's very good for like invoking the atmosphere of like foggy canals, and, down by the quayside, and when he has to go out to like rural France, and
we do always enjoy a well invoked foggy canal.
Yeah, well, he's very good at that, I would say. Yeah, And did I well, when I was away, maybe after the last one or before, I read another seminon about a Dutch serial killer.
A Dutch serial killer?
Yeah. So it was in my pile and I thought it was a Maigret and it wasn't.
Hmm.
It was called The Man Who Watched Trains Go By. And it's
you watch trains go by sometimes.
And yeah, it's like a standalone novel about this guy who basically gets told he's going to be made redundant, and he kind of goes mad and goes on a bit of a killing spree. But it's written from, like, I don't think it's first, but I think it's third person. But you just follow him around.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, and he's just descent into madness, basically.
Wow.
Ooh.
And yeah, it was reasonably early, I seem to remember.
Hmm.
There you go. See, it's not all about America and the UK. Go to France as well.
Or Kenneth Connor.
Or Kenneth... I was going to say, we haven't mentioned Kenneth Connor. But now the simple fact is... just before we conclude this episode, one thing I forgot to mention in the first episode was a true crime aspect. And, you know, I don't like to go on about true crime because, you know, there's quite a lot of true crime podcasts out there, and I'm sure they've dealt with this, the 8 million of them that there are.
Do you mean true crime?
No, or do I mean true crime? Well, maybe there's an aspect to it. This is true crime without the question mark. One of the things I've listed that happened in 1964 in America was someone called Albert DeSalvo was captured, finally. He was the Boston Strangler.
Oh, right.
That was a huge case.
This could be true crime, because is there not quite a big school of thought that the guy that they caught who was the Boston Strangler was actually never the Boston Strangler?
I don't know. I didn't look into it that detailed.
I believe so. My serial killer knowledge, I think there are doubts about whether he was the guy.
Oh, right.
Like real genuine, not just conspiracy theory doubts, kind of.
Because it was big, he killed a lot of people, the Boston Strangler.
And did they not? I'm talking off the top of my head here, so I might be totally wrong, but were there not a couple of different MOs?
Modus operandi.
And, yeah.
So there might have been two Boston
Strangler. Yeah, I think this guy was like a bit of a chatterbox, and I think he might have owned up for something just for the notoriety.
Yeah, well, there's a history of confessors, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's a good character in, looking at Morgan here, there's a good character in 2000 AD, I think it's in Judge Dredd, called Edwin the Confessor.
Is
in one of the stories, someone who just confesses a load of crimes, and he loves it when Judge Dredd locks him up for obstructing justice or something like that, because that's all he wants out of it.
It's like mirrored in Frankie the Squealer in The Simpsons many years later. I can't help it, I just love squealing.
Talking of true crime, have you seen The Staircase on Netflix?
I've not seen The Staircase on Netflix.
You should watch that.
Well, maybe I will.
We should.
Well, I'm too busy watching Better Call Saul once a week.
So you should check that out, see what you think.
I'm too busy waiting for Better Call Saul to get a few weeks in so I can watch several at once.
Well, you could fill up the time by watching Iron Fist and getting really bored.
I did that for a bit and then I stopped.
Although I will say, it does get better as it goes along, because Misty Knight comes into it and she's brilliant.
Misty Knight is cool. I've got really behind with all the Marvel things, sadly.
It's almost like there's too much TV these days and kids don't know they're born.
Exactly.
They should have to wait until Nightmare comes on at 4:45.
I reckon I've watched less. There's more choice. I reckon I've watched less.
Yeah.
Hence watching reruns of 30-year-old Inspector Morse, because it's just like... Well,
there's like loads of things I kind of want to watch. I don't watch any of them. And then I watch like A Top of Pops from 1986 and then I'm done.
Yeah.
And I watch an episode of Doctor Who from 1964 instead, with some robots with tubes coming out of them. And that's the main plot point.
Well, you know, we're a happy, healthy bunch, so...
We are. We're well-rounded individuals.
But, yeah.
Well, I don't really think we've got anything else to say, have we?
I don't think so.
We could probably cover a bit more. Well, I've not done any true crime.
What do you want to do, a true crime?
Well, crime?
true
crime. Well, I've not thought about one, but should we see how it goes?
Yeah, go on, let's see what happens here.
If it's no good, we can get rid
of
it.
We'll put it out.
Yeah. What was the general involved
true crime? Just start a new one.
All right, okay, yeah, okay.
It'll probably be easiest.
What, like as a bit of a resume about what a particular episode was going to be like?
Just tell us about a true crime.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. I might edit an underscore under this. Well, it's dramatic
okay,
enough.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah. If there's some editing going on, then you can get rid of some of those blanks where I'm trying to remember.
Remember.
It was hidden behind the combine harvester. It was obscured largely by the big hay bales, sodden from being left too long out in the autumn rain. Whilst the barn was dry, the scene was damp, with blood, with soil, with oil. He honed...
Can I ask a question? What county did this take place in?
I can't believe you just said that, because I was just going to say he owned half of Hampshire. And his ancestral seat was in Andover, but between the two spires of that same town. He was in need of an heir, and in the eight... yeah.
May I
right, we'll end that. We'll end that. So we've got a scene of a crime in a damp barn. We've got
between spires of Andover.
Yeah, and he owns half of Hampshire. So what's your question?
Well,
so I've got a lot of questions that I've not even answered myself.
I believe that the issue was that they couldn't prove the provenance of his previous son as the true heir, and a lot of the issues involved. The potential burial of something under one of the fields in Hampshire.
What?
And the...
What's he on about now? Is this real or... is this true crime meeting true crime?
No, I was making that up.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, sorry. Right, well, that sounds quite plausible, actually.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Almost too plausible.
This is going to be very difficult to edit.
16 years later, he was arrested on the Isle of Wight hovercraft.
Oh, dear. Oh, these people could have switched off by this point. On trumped-up charges as well, really. Just merely a way of keeping him away, keeping him away from the making his contact.
Let me do that a bit again. I can do that bit better. It just requires one line. 16 years later, he was arrested on the Isle of Wight hovercraft terminal. No. 16 years later, he was arrested on the Portsmouth hovercraft terminal in the rain.
Oh, Lord. I'm putting this out unedited now, you know. Oh, dear me.
I definitely listened to an entire podcast of Steve-O just doing different versions of descriptions of someone being arrested at a hovercraft terminal.
Is Portsmouth funnier than the Isle of Wight? I don't know.
I got that last one wrong. Go with the first one, that was better.
Okay. Well, you realise this is going out entirely unedited.
All right. I can get it right.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
16 years later, he was arrested at the Isle of Wight hovercraft terminal at Portsmouth.
Dot, nice. Dot, dot. I'm going to say goodbye now. I must. Goodbye now.
Goodbye now.
Chop, chop.